title of her work is Soil Bacterial and Fungal Community Responses Across Conservation Reserve Program, Chronosequence in Texas High Plains Region. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Terrence. Thank you, everybody, for coming today. This work I'm actually presenting on behalf of my student who just successfully defended her PhD, Dr. Mamata Kakarla. She is not able to be with us. We're all eagerly awaiting the news of her arrival of her first child, so we're all on pins and needles waiting for her. I would like to acknowledge our co-authors, Dr. Lisa Foltz from LSU, a former PhD and postdoc working in my lab, Cheng Hui Li, another PhD student who will be giving a presentation following mine on some other component of CRP work, Dr. Veronica Costa-Martinez at the USDA ARS in Lubbock, Dr. John Zak, Dr. Rao Kadapalli, and Dr. Robert Rydall at Texas Tech University. Also like to acknowledge our funding source, the USDA NIFA Award in 2012. So the CRP, the Conservation Reserve Program, is a program that was initiated in 85, and it basically takes highly erodible land and converts it into low or less disturbed land, such as perennial grasslands in our area. And there's been a lot of reports in the literature about the ecological benefits from this program, including the reduction of over 450 million tons per year that is not exposed and blown off via soil, water, or wind erosion. There's also the accumulation of over 50 million metric tons of CO2 that's been sequestered per year across the lands in the U.S. Enhanced physical properties. And these are all properties that are influenced by the increased microbial biomass and microbial activity. But very few studies have looked at the molecular characterization of these bacteria and fungal communities and how they might influence and initiate some of these ecosystem processes of importance. In the U.S., Texas actually leads the nation with the majority, the most land enrolled in CRP, and the majority of that land in Texas is centered in the northwest section of Texas. It's called the Southern High Plains or the Texas High Plains region with 1.3 million hectares in there. And the study is along using this framework where the original ecosystem is a short grass prairie and our disturbed system is based on intensive monoculture cropping of a very economically important crop. It's cotton. We produce 60% of the U.S. cotton in our region. However, from an ecological perspective and specifically a soil health perspective, it's not the best crop. It's a very low residue returning crop, and historically in our region, it requires or culturally requires intensive tillage operations. And so the concept with the CRP is to follow somewhere along this trajectory of restoring that ecosystem to its more enhanced functionality through water holding capacity, the reduction of erosion, as I mentioned, and increased biodiversity from both above ground and below ground perspectives. And so by decreasing soil disturbance, by converting these fields into perennial grassland systems, we are increasing plant biomass, which provides food for a pretty much starved microbial population. These soils are very low in organic matter inherently. This reduction in disturbance and increased plant biomass will alter the microbial composition, and then this translates into enhanced soil processes that are important for restoration, such as nutrient turnover, carbon sequestration, and aggregation. And again, there's a lot of work that's been done on both physical and chemical attributes and the benefits of CRP, but very little has been done looking at the microbial distribution. And from our perspective, it all starts with the microbes, and they're the ones that are creating the aggregates and turning over carbon into these more stable pools and providing the nutrient turnover for plant productivity. So the overall question of one of the questions of Mamata's dissertation was, how do soil bacterial and fungal communities change during different stages of restoration? Again, we know that the restoration is a good thing, but does time under restoration influence this pattern? And in general, our hypothesis is that young sites, such as the ones that we identified, 6 to 15 years, will be more similar to the cropland sites, which are 0 years under-restored. And as we increase restoration, we hope to achieve a community composition and functionality from an ecosystem perspective that more reflects a non-disturbed site, just such as rangelands in our area, which have never been cropped or plowed. And we were able to identify 3 sites that fall under this category that were at least under this management practice for more than 50 years. So we worked very closely with NRCS agents across 7 different counties in our Texas High Plains region. We identified a total of 26 fields, and in 2012 and 2014, we sampled those fields to a depth of 10 centimeters for herb portion and deeper for some of the biochemical properties. This soil is fine sandy loam. It has a wind erodibility index of over 200 tons per hectare per year if left fallow. So dust storms in our area are very prevalent. And so wind erosion is of a huge natural resource concern for us. Again, these are inherently low organic matter soils, 1.2% organic matter. It's not carbon, but organic matter content. And 73% sand on average in the top 10 centimeters. So what she did was we went out and sampled again in 2012 and 2014. These were collected in the summer. And she extracted DNA and cleaned up that DNA using kits provided by Mobile. She prepared libraries for a dual index paired end sequencing using the Illumina MiSeq platform. And she specifically targeted the V3, V4 hypervariable region of bacterial 16S rRNA gene and the ITS1 region for fungi. Following sequencing, the sequence were processed following CHIME pipeline. OTUs were assigned and classified using the Green Genes database for bacteria and UNITE and BLAST for fungi. And at the end of this, she acquired over 77,000 sequences for bacteria per sample and over 100,000 sequences after the cleanup process per sample for fungi. So a huge data set. And the first result I'd like to share with you is showing the bacterial richness and diversity. Red is cropland, blue is young CRP, yellow old, and black is rangeland. And we were actually surprised to see that there was no differentiation based on time under restoration for both numbers of OTUs or operational taxonomic units. You can kind of think of those as species, but not exactly. And there was also no difference in overall diversity between the 3 age groups. However, there was a difference in converting CRP into some form of grassland, and that's those diversity measures increased rather rapidly within the first 6 years. So that, in actuality, that's actually a positive thing that we're getting similar richness and diversity levels from a bacterial perspective within 6 years that are no different from those long-term rangeland sites. And then this is a distance-based redundancy analysis using phylogenetic diversity measures of UNIFRAC, weighted UNIFRAC measure distances. And again, we have cropland on the left in gold. And then there actually was no statistical difference based on age, similar to the diversity and richness measures I just shared with you between young, old, and rangeland. But again, most of the variation was explained along this first axis, and they were differentiated from cropland versus all of the grasslands. And when we look more closely at who's there, we find that the cropland supports taxa that are copiotrophic in nature, and the Nitrospirae and Germanomonidates are known to respond very quickly to nitrogen fertilization, so that makes sense. And the bacterioides and members of proteobacteria, again, are more copiotrophic in nature, so they have a low carbon affinity. In contrast, the grasslands supported members were oligotrophic with high carbon efficiencies, such as Acetobacteria, Verrucomicrobia, Rubrobacteria, and then the planktomycetes are very sensitive to disturbance, so these are often used as an indicator of long-term ecosystem stability. And you'll notice, even though it's not statistically significant, there is a sort of a trend that the young sites were differentiated from the old and rangeland. And so we wanted to explore that concept and probe our data a little bit more deeply. And so Mamata had used a network analysis, and this is basically the colored samples are samples, our sites, and the white circles are our OTUs. And when common OTUs are present among all the sites, you get a collapse of all the data into the center. They're all kind of on top of one another, and there's no differentiation. And this is when we use the abundant microbiome, or those are OTUs that we count 1,700 times or more per sample. However, the rare microbiome is gaining popularity in microbial ecology studies. And if we look at the rare microbiome, then those that have counts that are 5 to 10 OTUs, we do see a distinct separation between cropland, young, and then old and rangeland are converging up here, suggesting that the old is resembling more the long-term rangeland sites, and that the young are differentiated from the old sites. So one of the ideas, we're not really sure of the ecological significance of this, but there's a lot of work being done looking at specifically the rare microbiome, and maybe it's the guys that are kind of lower in the pool, and they're having an ecological impact, but because of the abundance of these other taxa, we're just not seeing their contribution to the ecology. From a fungal perspective, we got a little bit better sensitivity. Again, there's no difference between young and old CRP from a richness or diversity measure, but we did see a 30% increase from cropland to the CRP sites, and between cropland and rangeland, there was an 80% increase in richness and diversity. And this is actually translated into a similar pattern looking at organic matter content. We increased organic matter content from 1 to almost 1.5% in the new and old CRP, so about a 40% increase, which is actually rather significant in these sandy soils of semi-arid environment. And we actually found that there was a doubling of the rangeland sites compared to the cropland. So we know we're not there yet, and we might need more time to allow these sites to be more fully restored. From a community composition, this is a DVRDA at the class level. And what we find, again, is that there is a separation between cropland and the grasslands, and that there's also a separation significantly between young and the old and rangeland sites. The cropland-supported taxa that were commonly classified as general litter decomposers and also members that are known to be pathogenic. Now, this isn't to the species level, so we can't confirm that they're pathogens that are increasing, but we do know that many members of these various taxa of fungi are pathogenic in nature, so it's something to monitor over time. And that we do know that as we increase in time, we saw a decrease in members of these groups and an increase of ecologically important taxa, such as glomerulomycota, mycorrhizal fungi, and also fungi that are lignin decomposers, so those that are able to degrade more recalcitrant material. They're also dark septates, so they can resist UV radiation. And many members are phosphorus solubilizers, very important in these alkaline semi-arid soils. So in summary, by converting cropland into grassland under the CRP program, the soil bacterial communities weren't really affected by time, but were distinct from those croplands, and that the increased abundance of bacterial taxa between the cropland and the grassland supported positive ecological benefits, including carbon sequestration, resistance to abiotic stressors. Those rubrobacteria that we found in these sites are also UV radiation resistant, and they're also resistant to high temperatures and drought. And the rare bacterial biome deserves some attention and some more further exploration to provide more insights into ecological functions. From the fungal perspective, converting from cropland to grasslands, we found that they were a little bit more sensitive to time under restoration. We found a decreased abundance of pathogenic fungal taxa with increasing time under restoration, and an increased abundance of fungal taxa that support positive ecological benefits, including enhanced phosphorus and water uptake, and resistance again to abiotic stressors. So with that, I thank you for your attention, and maybe if there's 30 seconds, we can take a question. And I just wanted to point out, this is one of the fields, I can't remember if it's a rangeland or a CRP site, but this is not a rain cloud, this is a dust cloud. And so we were actually out there sampling one day, and we were very happy to be in the grassland and not in one of our croplands during that day as the dust blew by us. So thank you for your attention. It depends on the age. Originally, back in the early mid-80s, when the program initiated, they planted to a monoculture non-native species lovegrass. I guess it was abundant at the time, and they were concerned with just stopping the wind from blowing that soil. But as time progressed, they realized the importance of native species, and so they're a mixture of native and a couple of non-native species. But as we get closer and closer to today, they're almost exclusively native. I don't believe there are forbs in the mixture of the seeds, but they do come in sort of naturally into the ecosystem. And there is a relationship, but they're pretty much different in every single site that we had, so we weren't really able to test any of those hypotheses, but certainly the composition of the above-ground biomass would influence it, the below-ground dynamics. But we can't really test that statistically. It's a great question, though. Mm-hmm. Thank you.